Well, go ahead and take your copy of God's Word and turn with me to Ecclesiastes once again. Hopefully, this week, as you look back, you had joy in the process. Notice I didn't say you enjoyed all the process, but you had joy in it. Maybe, hopefully this week, there's a little bit different conversation. Maybe some, it wasn't, I'm so tired and I'm so busy. Because most likely we all know that we're all tired and busy because we live under the curse still. We are still living at a time where sin is still here. And tiredness and vexation and frustration happen every day in some capacity. And so hopefully that was a good reminder for all of us. I know it was for my own heart last week. And hopefully today we'll continue the process as we think through Ecclesiastes. I'm going to go ahead and start in verse 24 of chapter 2. And then I'm going to read through verse 8. The bulk of the message will be those 8 verses of 3, 1 to 8, but I am going to give quick summary statements of a couple sections at the end. I told you that from the beginning of this series that we will not cover every verse in depth, but I will give some quick summary statements because I know it brings this section to a nice completion. And so go ahead, look with me at chapter 2, verse 24. Where it says, there's nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment? For to the one who pleases him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner, he has given the business of gathering and collecting, only to give to the one who pleases God, this also is vanity and striving after the wind. Verse 1 of chapter 3, for everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted. Verse 3, a time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to seek, and a time to lose, a time to keep, and a time to cast away. Verse 7, a time to tear, and a time to sow, a time to keep silent, and a time to speak, a time to love, and a time to hate, a time for war, and a time for peace. Let me go ahead and pray. Lord Jesus, this moment right now, this moment as we're sitting here, this group of people, each and every one of them, this church, the next breath and breaths we take, and when they all stop, is under your mighty hand. And Lord, for your people, that brings great peace, knowing for without you, we can do nothing. And so, Lord, I pray today that we are reminded in very real ways, encouraged by this time, in this place, in your story, history, that you are continuing to unfold each and every moment of each and every day of each and every life. And you're weaving it all together in beauty. And so, Lord, I pray that we'd be reminded of that, and somehow, by your grace, we can never step far enough back, but somehow try and step back and see the glory of your masterpiece that you are weaving together, and in time, it will be perfectly beautiful. And so, Lord, we pray all this in Christ's name. Amen. Many of you, I think many of you, I'll actually ask you to raise your hand just so I can put eyes on you. How many of you guys have been to Agua Viva, Mexico, which is where we used to go to years ago? Quite a few of you guys. So I remember years ago going to this place called Agua Viva, which means living water. It was a parachurch ministry in Mexico that Faith Bible Church went to for many years. And as you head there, as you get off the airport and you head to this place, it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere, and you come around these turns that you think you're going to fall off the edge of, and death will take place quickly if you fell off the edge of, depending on who's driving also. But you head around the turn and you see from a distance, you see the sign, Agua Viva. And come to find out, it's a sign that they did in rocks, large rocks at the top of a hill, a very large hill. And so if you're new there, typically what they do is they try and persuade you to go on this journey to get to the top of this place, which is well worth it. It's breathtaking, actually. If you can get your way up there, if they can persuade you to go up there, it is pretty much, picture this, kind of straight up the side of a mountain, and there's rough terrain, and depending on if it rained, which they don't get much rain, it's very difficult to get there. And so what happens is you finally get to the top, and usually what we would do is you would finally get there and you would just look out and you would be in awe of what you see. Then we would have some worship together and sing and enjoy that time together, and then we would reluctantly head back down. And it was most beautiful when you did it under the stars. So once you did that the first time, then you then go back. I think I went 5 or 6 times down there. And what happens is you then persuade others to go up there, partly because it's just part of the thing, but also because it's that well worth it. And this idea kind of reminds me of the allegory, which I've mentioned before, and is one that I enjoyed reading years ago from Pilgrim's Progress by John Bunyan. And you guys know the story, I think many of you guys do at least, the story about a man named Christian that represents all Christians, all of God's children, who is journeying while on earth, right, from his hometown called Destruction, which is the earth, and he's heading to the celestial city, which is heaven. And for any of us who have ever read it, you see this journey that he takes, and much of it is difficult as he encounters very hard things along the way. But there is some things like hopeful persons in his life that kind of encourage him to keep on keeping on, if you want to say. And in the end, he gets to the celestial city by those who are called the Shining Ones, which are the angels. And so through these seasons, if you want to say, of struggles and difficulty, the Shining Ones are the ones who ultimately take him to the celestial city. And in the end, as we know, it's all worth it. And so today, for those who do recognize and who have bowed the knee that all those things along the journey are a gift from God, we will be reminded that all of our seasons, right, all of our situations, all of our circumstances, all of what we call the good things and the hard things of life, God is weaving. And he's interweaving, and it's really hard for us to step back far enough to see all the time what God is doing, but he is the master artist that is preparing us to take us to that celestial city, which is beyond comparison of anything that we've ever experienced. And so with that said, let's go ahead and look at our first point, if you want to say, of verse 1, all matters matter. In other words, all matters under the sun, if viewed from over the sun, matter. For everything, there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. If you recall, we began this book with the theme, if you want to say, of verse 2, which says vanity, chapter 1 of vanity says the preacher, all is vanity. And again, Solomon's looking back at life and speaking to those who have life left to live. And he begins by the very nature of God's creation, if you remember. He walks through the order and the repetition of how God set it up that he said in and of itself is vanity if looked at it from itself. And so what does man gain? Then he moved into this from all his work. So here's the nature setup of this ordering process. And then what does man gain from all his work? Generations come and generations go, and the sun rises and the sun goes, and the streams come and the stream go. And Solomon kind of sets this stage of it's all vanity if looked at through the eyes of the world and worldly wisdom, void of God. And it just leads to what? Experiencing frustration and toil that makes no sense. And then last week marked the bookend and kind of the transition point in this book where Solomon comes and he brings us exactly where he wants us to be. If you just read this, if you didn't know any of the book of Ecclesiastes and somehow I could just give it to you with saying whatever, I wouldn't tell you it was the Bible, it would have no verses, and you just read it, it would come to this point where it's like, well, this is really depressing. So all of this just doesn't matter. And that's exactly where he wants us to be. And chapter 2 then ends by turning to the one of all that creation and all of life's pleasures that's in and of themselves are vanity. And he says, no, they all matter if viewed from the hand of God. And so joy in life under the sun only happens when we see life from over the sun. And from the one who created the sun, which is God himself. And so Solomon kind of clarifies everything that he's been talking to up to that point in their right context are right and good and to be enjoyed and to have joy and are pleasing to God as we see it from God. Things of the earth, such as the Garden of Eden, we start there, right? They didn't just sit there and look at God. There were things that he gave them to enjoy pre-sin. And to have joy. And then all those things of the earth that we talked about last week and the pleasures that he laid out in chapter 2, as we see it from the hand of God, catapults our emotions and our affections, kind of stirs our affections for the one who gave us such things. And so Solomon has kind of turned the page now into this next section of the letter, as Solomon will drive home all of these type of things, including our circumstances and our situations in our life right now. As I stated, all that we call the good things in life and the difficult things, the what we call the bad things and the ugly things, if you want to say, are under the sovereign hand of God. It's for him and from him and right through him and back to him, which brings him glory. Just this week, actually, I had a quick conversation with someone who's a part of our body about how to have joy in each and every moment. I mean, as moments come at us, how do you have joy in that moment? And it's remembering that joy doesn't necessarily mean that we enjoy that moment, as I said in the opening. Joy comes in each and every moment, each and every hour of, yes, really difficult things, as we are reminded who those things come from. And so just as we would all agree and yes, say amen to God has ordained and orchestrated, no one would argue the nature in here or the creation and how he set it up and how he ordered all things in his creation in chapter 1. He ordained those things. He designed them and he made them for a very purpose, including the ones he created, which is the apex of his creation, you and I. Remember, God has so graciously created us and allowed us to be a part of this big story. And so this week, Solomon continues on just this reaffirming that joy comes from being reminded of who the one over heaven and how he's orchestrating our lives under heaven. In other words, in everything, it says there's a season, a time for every matter. And that word matter can be translated purpose. And that really changes, I think, my thinking, our thinking, where we say everything, it's all in its totality. So it's not everything separated. It's all brought together. Season could be translated this, the set time, the appointed times in that totality is weaved together. And then it says for all matters, which means for a purpose or for purposes. The NASB translates this verse, there is an appointed time for everything. And again, so just as nature itself is continuous and repetitious, and it's not vanity as we see it from who it's from and how it's ordered, it's the same with our seasons of life, in our circumstances of life, And so the works and seasons of you and I, God is sovereignly working for a greater purpose. And so we see even in Ecclesiastes 3, 9, and 10, who gave us this? It says, God has given toil to the children of man to be busy with. And then in verse 11, it goes on, it says, God has made everything beautiful in its time. And I'll quickly come to that at the end. And then again in verse 11, it says, God through this has put eternity or a yearning for eternity into the hearts of mankind. And so we all know you and I cannot see perfectly and perfectly clearly all that God's doing in our lives and in the lives of all those around us, let alone the entire world, let alone every generation that's ever lived on his earth. In verse 13, he then again says, remember again, it's from the hand of God. It's God's gift to you. And then in verse 14, we see that what God does lasts forever because why? God's done it. God did it, God's done it, and God is doing it. And so again, Kohelet, if you remember that word in chapter 1, the preacher is gathering us and he's giving us insight and he's making us recognize that everything in every season and every time God has ordained for a purpose, which makes it eternally and ultimately purposeful while we're here. And so joy comes from knowing and recognizing. And the problem for us, I realize the problem, it is that we cannot see everything. We live in moments, right? We live in an actual space, in an actual time, in an actual place in history. Well, God doesn't. He sees it all from the beginning, and he sees it all to the end. And so there's a very real sense in which we are living in one chapter of God's most beautiful book, and we cannot, for we are actually not to, try and somehow see how all of this is going to be brought together perfectly and beautiful in time. And so God, who is the sovereign one over everything, appointing everything, he is creating a masterpiece that doesn't just include our generation. It includes every single generation that he's ever created. And so then it's almost impossible for us to try and step back and be like, I don't know how all this is going to work, but he tells me it is beautiful in time. I think Derek Kidner like hits a home run here as he says, the trouble for us is not that life refuses to keep still, but that we see only a fraction of its movement and of its subtle, intricate design. We see a splice of the pie, if you want to say. Instead of changelessness, there is something better, a dynamic divine purpose with its beginning and its end. Instead of frozen perfection, there is a kaleidoscope movement of innumerable processes, which with its own character and its period of ripening and blossoming, beautiful in its time, albeit not our time, which contributes to the overall masterpiece, which is the work of one creator, that which is God himself. And so as we walk through this poetry that Solomon lays out, he's pointing us to this overarching masterpiece. He's really shouting, this is under the sovereign hand of God. This is all God's work, and it's for God's glory. And so in each and every season of life, he is weaving together each and every time frame. Some of us may remember. I remember them only because I was told about them. I've never actually, I don't think, seen one or used one. Where there's the old films that there's like little pictures of each, and then they put them together, and it creates a video or a film of some sorts. It's kind of what God's doing. I don't know what it's called. If you know, tell me later. But that's what God's doing with his generations, right? There's a generation and a generation and a generation and a generation, and he's putting this whole thing together, and from his perspective, he knows what he's doing, and it's going to be beautiful. And so as we walk through these verses, God is providentially, in his most perfect, holy, wise way, he is governing and superseding every single one of our lives exactly the way he wants it to be ordained. One guy says, throughout the Bible, the laws of nature, the course of history, the varying fortunes of individuals are ever attributed to God's providential control. All things, both in heaven and on earth, from the seraphim down to the tiny atom, are ordered by his never-failing providence. So intimate is his relationship with the whole of creation that a careless reader might be led toward pantheistic conclusions. Yet individual personalities and second causes are fully recognized, not as independent of God, but as having their proper place in his plan, and we could say in his story that he is unfolding. And really, we saw this in the book of Acts. I can't remember if Jared or I covered this, but if you look at chapter 17, it says he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth when having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place, that they should seek God and perhaps feel their way toward him and find him. And so God created, God determined, God allotted these very periods of times that you and I should live. It's not by chance that you and I live today in 2024. It's also not by chance, as we'll get to, that you and I will die at the very moment that we die. One more quote before we get into the poetry here. It says, the wise and regular and orderly administration of one who sees the end from the beginning and to whom there is no unanticipated contingency and whose omniscient eye in the midst of what appears to be inextricable confusion has a thorough and intuitive perception of the endlessly diversified relations and tendencies of all events, all circumstances, discerning throughout the whole the perfect of the harmony. And so it's like someone, I know we use this at times, you guys know Pastor John builds homes and he can see the end from the beginning. And so if you walked into, I got the opportunity to walk into one of what would be a very nice home. At the moment, it looked like a disaster in many ways, right? I don't know how all of this stuff is going to fit together, but somehow in time, it comes together, right? And it creates beauty. And so let's start looking at this as from God's perspective. Verse 2, there's a time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted. And so in light of all that I said, Solomon will now walk us through these very seasons of life that really, if you take them all together, every person in all of human history most likely will encounter all of these things. Not at one time, obviously, but in time. And so what he does with each line is he kind of creates these polar opposites, which when brought to completion is a totality of something. And just for the sake of knowing, it's called a merism. It's a device to represent entirety of two extremes, right? Hot and cold, if you want to say. It's a term of contrasting words or phrases that you bring them together and it makes sense in the whole. You see this in the opening line of the Bible, right? God created the heavens and the earth. That means he created the whole universe. Or God made day and night. He made a day, 24-hour day that we now live in. Or you could say something like, I searched high and low, right, to find something. Well, it doesn't mean you literally looked up and you looked down and you were done. No, it means you looked everywhere and you can't find it. I seem to do that with my car keys all the time. Anyways, in this poem, many of us know, you would probably get upset with me if I didn't mention that this poem was made into a song. I know some of you guys are sitting there like, at some point, he's got to bring up the birds. There you go, okay? There you go. Yes, it was made into a song. You can go listen to it on your own. But Solomon begins with life and death, and then he ends this whole thing, war and peace, a time to be born and a time to die. And if there's anything that we would all agree for sure that God appointed, it was birth. Like, none of us tried to figure out when we were gonna be born, because we weren't even thinking when we were gonna be born. But in time, in a particular place in time, in a particular season of his story, you and I were born into not only a time in his story, but also a people group in his story, and a family in his story, and a neighborhood in his story, and a state, and you could just keep going down the line. It is an allotted time, as we saw in Acts chapter 17. It wasn't by chance. It was appointed. We know the text of Psalm 139, right? Where he's forming, he formed our inward parts. There's been lots of babies born here recently. I think 22 in like a year and a half or something. Well, no parent, none of us were like, hey, I'm going to try and figure out when I'm going to have that baby at the exact moment in time. No, God did that. In Psalm 139:16, it says, your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written every one of them. What? The days that were formed by me. No, for me. The days that we live are formed by him, when as yet there were none of them. Before there were any of them, they were formed. They were allotted. And so the appointed time to be born and the appointed time to return to dust are appointed. Job says in 14:5, since his days are determined, or you can translate that appointed. It's you can translate that Hebrew word a very set spot. And the number of his months is with you, and you have appointed his limits, and he cannot pass. You and I cannot pass. We cannot outdo death. We cannot change our appointed time of death. One guy says it is an ordained appointment that you will keep and will not be a minute late. Your very first, even your last, and all in between is under the sovereign hand of God. Martin Luther said, you cannot live any longer than the Lord has prescribed, nor die any sooner. We know that Job himself said, after having it all and then seemingly losing it all and his family, he tore his robe, shaved his head, fell on the ground, and he worshiped and said, naked I came from my mother's womb. And you could take this in totality. Naked I came at the exact appointed time from mom's womb, and naked I'm going to go, dust I shall return. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Job essentially said, God created me. I came into existence. I came in this world, and I'm leaving this world on God's calendar. Sovereign Lord gave life, and he took it away. And Solomon goes on to say this in Ecclesiastes 5. He says, as he came from his mother's womb, he shall go again. Naked as he came, and shall take nothing for his toil that he may carry away in his hand. And so all of it is his. All of it is from the sovereign hand of God himself. All we ever have had, including life itself, is from the giver of life, God. And there's joy in knowing the one who gives the time of birth and death. Again, not that it's enjoyable, but there's joy and there's a rest of knowing it's under his control at his appointed time. And then he parallels this to plant life, if you want to say, right? Planting and harvesting. God established the seasons when things can be planted and when things can't. Like, I know some of you guys are big gardeners. I don't see any of you guys in the middle of December when it's snowing planting seeds to watch them grow in January. God does that, right? He did that. He also does it with animal life. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? And not one of them will fall to the ground. Not one of them will die apart from your Father. Do you not trust me? So from birth to death, in God's story, there's a time for each and every life. That from our perspective, we can never stand far enough back again to see how God is going to do this and make this beautiful in time. And I'm going to end with that understanding that I hope is really amazing and encouraging to you. Next, look at a time to kill and a time to heal. A time to build up and a time to break down. Now, there are multiple ways you can look at this, and I read through it and studied through it and thought through it with a bunch of dead guys. And there are multiple ways of which killing and healing takes place. There's a clear statement in Deuteronomy that says, vengeance is mine, right? Vengeance is the Lord's, for the day of their calamity is at hand and their doom comes swiftly. And then he goes on to say, see now that I, even I, am he, and there's no God beside me. We want to take this out of the word, I kill and I make alive. I wound and I heal, and there's none that can deliver out of my hand. For I lift up my hand to heaven and swear as I live forever. And then he goes on, there's
There's also obviously the verses about capital punishment in Genesis 9:6. And you see that again in Romans 13:3-5. You know, we also know not just those type of killings, there's a time to kill disease, if you want to say, right? There's medications that God has used as a means to his end that have allowed us to kill diseases like malaria, if you want to say, in the body, that has wiped many people groups and even nations at times gone. There's also a time where God works through families that have to make very difficult decisions as they're on these medical devices that's keeping one alive. But at the appointed time, God works through means to the end that life does end. We also know there's God uses means to an end as nations have been healed through various ways. In 2 Chronicles, you see this. Solomon finished. So you see Solomon himself finished the house of the Lord and the king's house, all that Solomon had planned to do in the house of the Lord and in his own house, he successfully accomplished. Then the Lord appeared to him. I have heard your prayer and have chosen this place for myself as a house of sacrifice. When I shut up the heavens so that there is no rain or command the locusts to devour the land, or send pestilence among my people, if my people who are called by my name humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and heal their land in time. He not only kills, he heals. Including in this are complete tragedies many of us have experienced, where from our perspective, life ends unexpectedly. On the flip side, some of us have experienced where it appears life is going to end, and then for some reason, we know the reason, God's reason, God uses various means and it doesn't end. It's all God. And again, I know that's a hard one to swallow sometimes, but that's a comfort and a peace that it's all God. Out of this, we know there's a time to weep, right? Verse 4, and a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance. Human emotions are fascinating. We mourn and we weep, and sometimes at the very same time, we laugh. When difficulties strike or hard times are seemingly never ending, there are times of endless tears. It seems like we just, am I gonna cry again? I know I'm going to cry again. We see this, the psalmist says this in Psalm 102, hear my prayer, he's begging the Lord, let my cry come to you. Don't hide your face from me in the day of my distress or difficulties. Incline your ear to me, please listen to me. Answer me speedily in the day when I call. You hear me? Lord, do you hear me? Listen, please answer. I'm crying, I'm begging. It's a hard pill to swallow then when you read Isaiah. It says, I'm the Lord and there's no other besides me. There's no God. I equip you though you don't know me, that people may know from the rising of the sun and from the west that there's none besides me. I am God. I form light. I create darkness. I make well-being and I create calamity. I am God who does all these things. Any child of God who is somewhat drowned in their never-ending tears hopefully comes to Psalm 102 where it says, but you, O Lord, are enthroned forever. You are remembered throughout all generations. You will arise and have pity on Zion. It is the time to favor her. The appointed time has come. And again, we know Job who despite, he lost it all. I mean, just imagine losing everything, not just losing your spouse, or not just losing a friend, but losing all of it, including all his wealth and health. And then he says in 1925, he comes to the place, finally says, I know that my Redeemer lives, and at the last, he will stand on the earth. There's this trust. I don't get it all. I don't like it all. But I trust God in it all. So the sovereign hand of God and the tragedies of life, Job trusted in that same sovereign hand in the midst of those tragedies. The psalmist says again, O Lord, I cry, I plead. And then he says again, O Lord, be merciful, help me. You've now turned my mourning into dancing. Only God can do that. You've loosed my sackcloth and clothed me with gladness that my glory may sing your praise. and finally not be silent anymore. Oh Lord, my God, I give thanks to you. Douglas Wilson says, when calamity, tragedy, hardship, and mourning comes, the tears follow, and the Lord's in it all. As the second part of our verse shows, this elicits also, there's not only tears, there's seasons of tears, there's seasons of birth, death, mourning, laughter, dancing, and there's times where we also need to embrace and other times where we need to refrain. Look at verse 5. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. Now, the first part of verse 5, you can come along with me, study it on your own. There's so much debate over exactly what verse 5 means and the language that's in there and the pairing of this verse. And I would probably lean towards this pointing to times of a life in life of needing to protect oneself by casting stones against the enemies, if you want to say. And there's also times where you gather stones for the enemies. So there's a time where we protect ourselves, we discern in wisdom. There's also times where they're our enemy and we gather stones for our enemy. And we know this in Romans 12. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. For by doing, you will heap burning coals on their head. Right? So there's times for both. And so as we move into the second part of this verse, there's a time to embrace and a time to refrain. And so in parenting and friendship and leadership and from God himself, there are times that are most appropriate and the proper thing to do is embrace someone. Even in spite of someone's sin, in spite of the difficulty that they maybe put you in spite of the struggles that they may be pushed upon you, in spite of the hardship that they may have laid at your feet, there is a time where you, like Jesus, need to say, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I'll embrace you, right? I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Take their yoke. Obviously, we can't like Jesus. I get that. But where we kind of take another's burdens and we let them rest. So the term embrace here in verse 5 is affection or care and concern. It's action-oriented love towards another. It's looking out and seeing, I need to embrace them. It's a child who just got caught lying, if you want to say. There's a time to embrace them. Or a friend who just lost their job and it actually was their fault maybe that they lost their job. There's times to embrace them. There's times where you're at odds with a friend of yours or someone maybe who's not a friend. Maybe it's your boss. You flat out disagree with someone. And yet there's times to embrace. Obviously, there's times to embrace after losing or you know someone who lost a precious family member or friend. It's from the hand of God. At the same time, Jesus looked Peter square in the face and said, "Get behind me, Satan." He didn't embrace him. He said, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a hindrance to me, for you are not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of man." And so there are times where you abstain from embracing. There are times where you embrace your child, and there are times where you give great consequences to them, right? I know all children want the embrace, but there's in times for great consequences also. Look at verse 6. There's a time to seek and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away. And so this is a time where you search, you investigate, you chase after, you try and gather more information in whatever area of life you're in. There's a time for that. There are problems in life that we have to figure out the answers to, that we have to use wisdom and discernment. Not everything is chapter and verse. To God, it's chapter and verse. And we all, I think sometimes we need to encourage in that way. Not everything is as black and white as you and I see it as black and white. Now, I realize God sees it black and white, but there's times where in James, he talks about we have to pray and beg the Lord for wisdom. We got to investigate and search out this thing. But there are also facts of life, facts of life. And the problem with this is, this one guy brought up, I loved it. A problem has an answer that we don't give up until we find out the answer. A fact of life has no answer and requires we give up and we simply submit to God's sovereign. I've shared this story in class many times, if you want to say, or a couple times, but a couple years ago, we were on our way back from vacation, and on the way home, we were in it was almost 100 degrees in our big, large van that we have to park in bus parking if we go to Cedar Point, but we were traveling home, and our air conditioning didn't work. I can tell you the whole story. It was horrendous. I didn't like it. I did not enjoy it. I tried to have joy in it. I really did. I did not enjoy it. Looking through the mirror and my kids looking at me like hopeless. What are we going to do, Dad? And my dear wife, who humbled me greatly through Bruce Smith, told me to stop at AutoZone of all places to fix my air conditioning. I'm like, AutoZone's not going to fix my air conditioning. Come on. Anyways, it was a problem. We went to AutoZone. This guy worked on it for like 3 hours. He figured out the problem and he fixed it. That's a problem that needs fixed, and it got fixed. There's also a time we're driving home from vacation and you come up to the tunnels of West Virginia and you can't go through because there's a wreck inside of one of them, right? You're not going through that thing. You're not going over the mountain. It is a fact of life. You have to pull off and you have to get a hotel and you have to spend lots of money and all the joys that come with that. It's beyond your control. You can't figure out what to do. It's the reality of ones, and you could chase this rabbit down a medical situation, right? Where you come to a point and there's not a solution, it's just God. And you just have to leave it to him. Knowing and believing it's from the hand of God, and he's the one who's in control of it. In control of it. Verse 7, look at verse 7 with me as we continue to move our way through this. It says, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silent, and there's also a time to speak. Again, this points to, what's fascinating is he's talking about the seasons of life, and a lot of what he's talking about is hard things. He's talking about sorrow and sadness and mourning and crying and death itself. I realize he's also talking about the other, but this is another hard thing. He's pointing to sorrow for people, as in the Old Testament, they would tear their clothes when they were in great sadness and they would fall to the ground and they would weep over the loss of a loved one. We saw this in Genesis 37 with Jacob and Joshua, right? And then you see in Joshua 7, after the Israelites were defeated at Ai, he was overwhelmed with sadness. As come to find out, the Israelites stole from the Lord, but they're in deep sorrow and they would tear their clothing and they would fall to the ground and cover themselves in ashes. And so when people are going through great difficulty, it's a time to depend on the Lord that much more greatly and under the sovereign hand of God. And in those times where people are going through great difficulty, isn't there a time to speak? And there's a time to keep silent. And it's a really fine line, isn't it? And I think more times than not, when people are going through great difficulty, I think a listening ear speaks way louder than us speaking. Right? Proverbs 15:23 says, to make an apt answer is a joy to a man and a word in a season. How good it is. Apt there is fitting. So in times of great need, apt is you make a fitting response. You make a response that's reasonable and makes sense and fits the occasion at the time. It's a right response at the wrong time is a wrong response, right? Someone has just lost a loved one. They're grieving. You don't run to Romans 8:28. In time, you may do that, but in the moment, that's a wrong answer. And so that at the same time, there is a time to speak. And so we have to prayerfully consider, this is from the hand of God. This is from the hand of God. Lord, give me wisdom on how to speak in this situation. And then he ends this section with, there's a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. Well, we all know God loves. That's a word or a phrase that we use, and he does love. Absolutely, he loves us perfectly at the right time. Do we also know God hates? Proverbs 6 says there are 6 things that the Lord hates. What are these things? I won't read the rest of it. They're pride, lies, killing of the innocent, those who are knowingly devising evil, and those who are running after a life of evil, and those who are trying to defame others. In this text, that's what he lays out. God hates pride, killing the innocent. Those who knowingly devise evil, they lie and defame about those who are around them. Why does God hate those things? Because they're not a reflection of the character of who God is. That's why God hates those things. God didn't create those things to take place in his perfect creation in the garden itself. Sadly, we also know in the sin-tainted world, there's a time for war and there's a time for peace. I realize in some realms of Christianity, we want to run away from this, but in God's sovereign plan and purposes, there are times of God-ordained, justifiable battles which are legitimate and necessary. It's in the Word of God. Joshua was leading the Israelites into the promised land after being freed from years of slavery. God commanded them to head in and take possession, which God was giving them, which elicited serious battles as they entered. There is a time for war. Moses, my servant, is dead. He says this in Joshua 1. Now therefore arise, go over the Jordan, you and all this people, into the land that I'm giving them. In every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given to you. And then he says, have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Don't be scared. Don't be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. And then as they go in, you see the battle at Jericho takes place. A war takes place. You see a battle Ai takes place. And 12,000 men, women, and children are killed. There is a time for that. There is a time under the mighty sovereign hand of God. We obviously see David. You see him going to war with the Philistines and other types or groups of people. There are clearly times for war, and yet there are times for peace. There are times for peace. And so from birth to death, everything, there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. Because there's a God who sovereignly rules and reigns every single matter that is under heaven. The times and the season. Phil Ryken says, nothing happens in life without his superintendence. Everything happens when it happens because God is sovereign over time as well as eternity. I think it's important to end or go into this next quote where he says, this perspective is not as far from fatalistic. We don't just let go and let God. The preacher's not saying that God is arbitrarily and thus there's nothing we can do about what happens. His point rather is that there is a fitness, a time to what happens. According to one commentator, Ecclesiastes 3 demonstrates the wise and regular and orderly administration of one who sees the end from the beginning. Philip Ryken, end quote. And so as you and I live our lives, God takes all of us through seasons. Some of us are at the beginning, if you want to say, of our life. Some of us are heading towards the end. Some of us are heading towards the end and don't know we're close to the end. And so as we live, in some time or another, we're going to experience all of these things, all of them. Some of us have experienced the hard things recently, the crying where we can't stop crying. In all such times and all such seasons under heaven are from the hand of God and for his glory. Look at how he makes this beautiful as we'll kind of wrap up these last couple sections. What gain has the worker from all his toil? And as you look at this in context, all the toil of the seasons that come and go and come and go, all of those things, I have seen the business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. He has made everything beautiful in its time. And he's put eternity into man's heart. All such tasks, all toil, all seasons of life and circumstances that we go through, what's it say in verse 10? He gives us those things to be busy with. What's the outcome? Maybe not in the moment, maybe not from our perspective or our vantage point, but he says God is making all of those things beautiful. I don't grasp it from my little mind that I have, but somehow God is taking all seasons of birth, and death and making it beautiful. He's taking all seasons of where he heals and where he kills and making it beautiful. All times of laughing and great sadness, he's weaving it together. Love and hate, peace and war. And somehow he's bringing all of these things together and he will create the most perfect masterpiece ever. Consider how God took each part of his creation. If stood by itself, it would not be as beautiful. If he just created a tree and stood it there for us to look at, it would not be as beautiful as he created it all and brought it together. Consider the beauty of each versus the beauty of it all. He took 6 days and created things individually that then were brought together to make creation beautiful as a whole. Some of you may remember a guy named Jim Valvano. Does that ring a bell with anyone? He was a basketball player at Rutgers, and I remember watching this acceptance speech as he was dying. And he had somehow flown into New York City, and he could barely walk to the podium to accept his award. And I don't know if he was a believer or not, but truth is truth. He proceeded to give this, what I consider one of the best speeches ever that I had heard. In this speech, rather early on, he brought up what a joy-filled day would look like. And he said it would be a heck of a day. He says, to me, there are three things we should all do every day. We should do this every day of our lives. Number one is laugh. You should laugh every day. Number two is think. You should spend some time in thought. And number three is you should have your emotions move to tears. It could be happiness or joy, but think about it. If you laugh, you think, and you cry, that's a full day. He says, that's one heck of a day. What's he saying? This isn't the Bible, but essentially God is doing this. He is weaving all of these things that we see sometimes as good and we see sometimes as bad, and he's weaving into one perfect masterpiece, which gets us to Romans 8, which is God causes all things. Not God stands back or God turns his head when bad things happen. No, God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. You and I go through life each and every day, each and every season. And they're hard, and there's laughing, right? There's death that we've experienced, and there's birth. There's wars, and there's peace. And we have joy when we step back and say, I don't understand it all, but it's from the hand of God. It's from his sovereign hand. And that's why he goes on in verse 12 and says, there's nothing better in the life that we live for them to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in his toil. This is God's gift. My encouragement to us is, I don't even know what tomorrow holds, and neither do you. But my prayer is for myself and for you guys as we step back. We see that God is weaving this perfect masterpiece that in time and for eternity, we're gonna say, wow. That is why all of that makes sense. It was all purposeful. It was all purposeful because it was from God's hand.